Danian and Catherine Brinkley, writers, authors, spiritual teachers who have both survived near-death experiences, both of them. This devoted couple works to champion spiritual ethics in daily life, and in turn, they've put together a not-for-profit organization, which you've heard Danian talk about so often on this program, the Twilight Brigade. More than 5,000 volunteers now have been trained to be at the bedside of our nation's dying veterans. Here they both are tonight for a couple enlightening hours, Danian and Catherine Brinkley. Hello, you two. How are you?
Hi, George. Thank you for having us on this evening. How are you?
Good. I'm great. Danian, how
Hi,
are you?
Hi, George. Thank you for having us on tonight. How are you?
Well, now, this is going to be unique for me, because, Catherine, I've never interviewed you before.
No, you have not.
Just Danian. So tell me a little bit about you, Catherine, because you, too, have experienced the near-death.
Yes, I have. I've had two near-death experiences, what I would call out-of-body near-death experiences. Nothing as in-depth as Danian has experienced, but when I was 12, I drowned. And before I could be saved and resuscitated, I remember leaving my body and watching myself dangling in the water, thinking, this is awfully odd. But at that age, I had no understanding of the near-death experience.
No.
So then again, at age 29, I was stung by a bee in the neck.
Oh.
And at that point...
Ouch.
Yes. Well, I had always been afraid of bees, if that's the funny thing. And I never understood why, because I'd never been stung before. But once I was, I had an immediate reaction because I was stung in the jugular. So it went straight into my bloodstream, into my heart. And I lifted out of my body and floated up to a place just under the ceiling next to an open window in my bedroom. And I realized that I was going to go through that window, and this part of my life was going to be over. But I had absolutely no concern about that at the time. I was at peace, totally at peace, and at one with everything in the universe. I knew that there was a divine plan, and I was part of it. And then my little daughter, at the time Elizabeth was only 7, she came running down the hallway, and she shook me and asked me to wake up. There was something very wrong. And I was back in my body immediately. And then I was infused with all the human emotions of, oh, my goodness, I could have died, and who would have raised my children?
Yeah, then it hits you, doesn't it?
It does. It hits you. So from that point on, I never had a fear of death again.
Danian, you've had 3 near-death experiences. For those new folks who continue to join this program, tell us a little bit about them.
Well, mine is... You know, cat catches on faster than I do, George, so they have to kill me a lot more often.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but mine was quick. You know, I grew up in South Carolina, and I had absolutely no spiritual nature about me, and my religious context was I'd always believed, you know, I always could not buy into the fact that I was guilty of the original sin, what some people were doing in the desert 5,000 years ago, never resonated with me. I was talking on the telephone on one Wednesday afternoon during a thunderstorm. I heard it coming. I was hit in the head by a bolt of lightning. It went down my spine, welded the nails of the heels of my shoes to the floor, threw me in the air, suspended me in the air, threw me back down on the bed, dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for 6 days, partially paralyzed for 7 months, 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. Lifted out of my body, I entered this place I call the blue-gray place, George. I watched. It's the in-between place between this world and the next world. I could be aware that there was a greater world or consciousness going on around me, but I could also watch what was happening. I watched my friends work on me. I watched them get in the paramedic ambulance. I heard them say, he's gone. This tunnel forms, and I moved down this tunnel. 3 years later, I got struck by lightning again talking on the telephone.
Unbelievable. You would think you would learn the first time,
well,
can you?
You know, that just goes to show. I didn't have a near-death experience. I was unconscious about 45 minutes, and it took me a couple of months to reactivate myself. And then 12 years later, I had to have open-heart surgery. I went into the surgery. Went in, put the anesthesia on me. I lifted out of my body. I knew the conversation of what was going on between the doctors and the nurses. I watched them cut my chest open. I watched the whole event. I lifted out of my body. I was in this blue-gray place again. And then the same system, a series of chimes and a series of tones or chimes is what I would say. And then I'm down the tunnel. I come into this place of bright, brilliant, beautiful light. the most amazing thing the first time, George, is I was paralyzed and I couldn't move and I couldn't see. So after the first lightning strike, to be when I was burning and on fire, to be no pain, to be able to move, and to be able to see was so amazing about this new blue silvery place that I discovered. And so these were the first two within a 13-year period. I spent 2 years learning to walk and feed myself, and I became obsessed with trying to figure out where this place was because it fits no description that we've ever heard.
Were you a believer in this place before these events occurred?
Oh, I would not. I grew up as a bully. You know the story.
Oh, I know.
Jackass. Yeah. I would never believed it. I wouldn't have believed it. And when some people say, well, I don't believe that's true, I don't blame them, George. I wouldn't have believed this if it didn't have happened to me, and I have not spent 33 years studying it. So we are going through a period where so many new phenomena are occurring. But why I guess we've become such good friends is I believe that this is one of the tandemont perspective is necessary at this particular time and where we are as a race and where we are in our evolution. And it's so important that we understand this stuff.
Maybe more so now than ever. Friday night, Danyon and Catherine, we do, and Danyon, you know this, every Friday we have what is called the prayer, the consciousness list of people who are sick. Folks will email me and say, you know, my mother, she's got cancer or this. Please put her on this prayer list. And I do. And then, you know, the listeners at their own leisure on a Friday, they concentrate. They try to send light, you know, as you both do in your work, the secrets of the light. And I've got to tell you, I get responses back from people. This thing works, whatever it is.
No question.
You know, and I don't know if it works with everyone who is ill or sick, but I get some of the most incredible emails from people, and it's working for animals, too. You know, we've had little cats on this thing and dogs, and the owners a few days later will say, you know, my cat was supposed to be dead by now, and it's alive. It's doing better than when it was, you know, a little kitten. It is amazing. I can't figure out, Danyon and Catherine, what this is.
It's you, George.
No, it's not me.
No, wait, stop, George. Listen. And I won't interrupt you, but listen to me. We've been friends a long, long time.
Yep.
And we have a system in the book called the Fourfold Path to Power, and Kat will tell you about that. But when a person sets their intention, and your intention has never been trying to really prove so many things as to explore and expand the knowledge so that your listeners can hear and have a better detailed information to make choices. But your intention is to get the message out and to let people decide for themselves, and it's about intention. And that you're not afraid to step up to the plate based on that you have grown up in this. You've been around it. Your aunt and your family explored this, and then you made a career of looking for more information to help not only you but all of us better understand this. So you are a driver in it. I remember when Art was causing it to rain all over the country, and then that scared him. But
yeah.
What I love about you is it's the fact that you have the power of intention. You have the system that you use because you love your audience and they love you. And collectively we take a time in the midst of all this stuff that's going on to care and love and support each other as spiritual beings. And that's how it works.
Well, you know, honey, I think even more than that.
I like it when you call me honey.
I thought she was calling me honey, Danyon.
I'll call you both honey. But I wanted to bring up the fact that a lot of people believe that prayer works for us according to our faith. But when Danyon was in the hospital back in 1997 and Art Bell put out the call around the world for people to pray for him, Danyon had no idea that was going on. And yet, he saw a silver-blue, mist come into the room. And he was healed by the power of prayer. And he didn't even know that people were praying for him.
So that's where I really became aware of it, George. Because, you know, every like there's 8 million stories in the Naked City, and that story was just one of them. And I watched this happen to me, and the pain was so severe I couldn't even think. And then the pain went away when this room came, this silver blue mist came into the room, and I could think. And it was amazing that it was 2 days later before I knew that Art had done that.
He did the same thing when Richard C. Hoagland had his heart attack down in Miami. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened. I think Richard made a miraculous recovery.
Yeah.
It is truly incredible. Well, how did you two meet? This is strange. I mean, here we are, two individuals, two interests, after-death experiences, and you somehow seem to get together. You know, if you believe in reincarnation, I'm sure your souls knew each other in past lives. But how did this one happen?
Well, we certainly believe we knew each other before, but this one happened in a very wonderful way, and it could only have been what I call the hand of God. I was living outside of Reno on a little ranch, and I was raising six children and doing writing a column in a metaphysical newspaper.
Okay.
Where I interviewed people that I admired. I had that privilege. I could pick and choose who I wanted to interview. So the likes of Danyon Brinkley, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Louise Hay, these were the people I was interviewing. And I just called Danyon up one day and asked him if he was ready for our interview, and there was a spark between the two of us. I had seen a video of him lecturing in Dallas, I think it was, wasn't it, honey?
Yeah.
And I was aware of his story of being struck by lightning and going to the other side. And I did feel a connection with him. So when I called him to do the interview, that was validated, that we definitely had known each other before.
Who made the move first for the date, you or Daniel?
She proposed marriage.
Yeah, on the first date, right?
No. That was the second interview, dear.
But you see, George, this is when Saved by the Light was. I was on the New York Times bestseller list, and Saved was taking over the universe. And it's like this new book. I mean, there's so many people interested in the way we look at this thing that's called death. And Kat was probably the fifth interview that day. And I was probably doing like now. We do like 20 or 25 a month, but we wait to bring the good stuff to the coast-to-coast people.
That's
like I told Tommy. I mean, there's a point in all of this that we've saved through all the interviews for this interview. Because, you know, I am an avid listener to Coast to Coast.
And tell him who introduced you to Coast to Coast, darling.
You did, my darling.
Thank you.
Way to go, Kathy.
And she was just another interviewer. And I sat back in the chair, but the brilliance of her questions and that she was pulling stuff out of me that I had never had. Everybody's the same crap, I mean the same stuff, George. And she was pulling stuff out of me that shows that she not only read the book, they were in-depth questions that I saw that was more than just drama. It was really trying to give people an understanding of my emotional viewpoint of it. And when I read the article, she made me appear to have really good sense.
You know, I was petrified of the thought of death until I started hearing you, Danyon. And I started to realize, you know, there's much more to this. You know, though I don't think anybody wants to die and end whatever life he or she may have and prolong it as long as you can, it's kind of sobering to know and really begin to believe that there is something else over there, that it just doesn't end.
There is, George, unequivocally and absolutely. There is not only something over there, it is the most delightful journey. But what we're trying to bring forth in this new book is the preciousness of this life and the ins and outs and the complexity in this life and how that a couple, Kat and I was love at first sight when I saw her, George, it's that standard story of your knees shaking and your heart going into your throat, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, no, it was
true.
I was like super guy, and yet all of a sudden I became childlike, and it's been that kind of love now 14 years. And I believe that our common belief in the spiritual afterlife based on the events, and then our work in the Twilight Brigade as all volunteers in this, begins to empower this consciousness of how precious and important this life is. But for anybody, there is a life after death. I'll stake my soul on that. There's a method by which we leave this world, but there's also a reason for why we come. And what Kat and I tried to do so much, George, because I know everybody on, that listens to Coast knows me, you know, but yeah. What we're trying to do is bring a whole new perspective in the Secrets of the Light, and also to try to change that, to turn that tide of where we're taking ourselves based on what we all know is a complete transition of consciousness. The Mayans talk about it, the Egyptians, the Nostradamus, there's all these stories, and we're in that period, and what we're trying to do with this book is really change that focus toward what we believe is not only next, but why we're here.
We'll be back in just a moment with Danian and Catherine Brinkley. They've got the fourfold path to power that they write about in The Secrets of the Light. Danian's website and Catherine's, it's called Danian.com. Let me spell it for you. DANNION.com. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Danian and Catherine Brinkley on Coast to Coast tonight. Danian and Catherine, in the book, The Secrets of the Light, you write about a fourfold path to power. What do you mean by that?
Well, when we decided to write The Fourfold Path, it was because we wanted to find a formula for using the spiritual tools that Danian had been given on the other side, and give it to people to use in daily application to fill their lives with more power and purpose. So we came up with a fourfold path. The first path is love, and then belief, then choice, and then prayer.
Well, so you are already on the path, George.
We're doing it. We're all doing it.
We tried to make it as easy as possible.
But what George does, you know what, George? I like to also say that I just love Alex Jones.
You heard him there on that commercial.
But he's wonderful.
Yeah,
I'm an Alex Jones fan. Whenever I want to get radical and conspiratorial and look at the end of time, I always go and look at Alex. But this is what we were doing. In hospice work, you know, 31 years as a hospice volunteer, 26,000 hours recorded in the VA, and literally over 50,000 hours at the bedside. What I've learned from having these near-death experiences, and I really want to get to the third near-death experience, George, but what I really have learned from these near-death experiences is there are certain frameworks that you can take a situation in grief, loss, bereavement, and transition, either a person leaving this world or those who stay behind. And in the lessons, you can frame reality because we all get too emotional. We all get too scared. We all get too carried away. Mm-hmm. We all get afraid and frightened. You can frame them. But there has to be a place where you can view the whole purpose of your life. And we called it the fourfold path because Kat and I sit down, and like many couples, and who have a commonality in the experience, and that we built the Twilight Brigade, we go over events after people have passed from this world to the next and the results of what happens to their families. And so when we decided to write this book, we had to sit down and look at ways that we could give people tools to use. Just like when you're given the Friday night prayer session,
right?
Everything is about love. Mm-hmm. Then it's about belief. What do you believe about your love, not anybody else's, not giving your love and hoping someone's going to create a value of it before you recognize that value? And once you recognize the value of your love, you can attach a divine purpose because we're all connected and we're all created in the Creator's perspective and of love. Then what choices do you make? What choices do you make? And look at the choices you made, George, that you put Friday night and you created a prayer group from people's pets to their family members,
sure,
and all of that, because what happens is people don't want to be alone as they go through this. And you have 13 million people who will come to the bed, and if you just got a third of that, you have 5 million people praying, because it's the same thing that Art did. You're doing it. So your belief in your love and what you're doing comes into play, and the choices you make is to step out and really care about your audience. And this is what Kat and I do. And then you come to the choices that you make. And then from those choices, we created a perspective of prayer. And in the perspective of prayer, we call it willful, conscious intent. And when you look at the definitions of those words, and people say, well, Danian, where did you get the definition? Well, there was a scientific protocol put together about how to term and do studies on prayer. And it was in 2000, and it was put on by the Rockefeller Foundation at Duke University. Mm-hmm. And this guy named Dr. Thalen came up with a way to put a research paradigm protocol into play called willful conscious intent. And so what we do is we frame the book, because a lot of people are going to go through loss and grief, and a lot of people who are facing leaving this world never get a chance to bring it about. So we put this into place as a way to systematically take the reality of transition and the reality of staying behind so that people can work a system that brings relief, that brings understanding. A lot of times it brings connection to that person who has departed. But more important, it empowers them to continue living their life and to send that love necessary to help that person who's going from this world to the next to make an even more powerful transition and to not be held back by the forces a lot of times that we who lose people in grief create as a blockage for them to travel further.
It's almost as if in using these four steps, it puts your body in sync with the universe somehow. It is remarkable, isn't it?
I think that's exactly right. And another thing that we do in our family, George, every morning, is choose a jewel from a book that I've written called Jewels for the Soul. It's a book of spiritual reflections and affirmations. And we will pass the book around the family. And invariably, everyone chooses a different affirmation for the day. But by aligning their minds, their hearts, and their bodies with that affirmation, it creates a sense of purpose in their day that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Daniel, let's get into now that third death experience, near-death experience, which I assume was the granddaddy of all the other two. Huh?
It was the greatest point. Every time I go through one of these experiences, George, it has a continuation of them teaching me. Do you remember Ruth Montgomery?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Ruth Montgomery used to send me, and I have these letters, but Kat and I've just never published them. Arthur Ford, Lily, and the group is who channeled through Ruth Montgomery. She's probably sent me 10 letters through the years about messages from Lily and the group about what it was I was doing and what it was that it was helping those on the other side to bring forth information. I just never put that stuff out. But in the third near-death experience, everything has always been a lesson. I never realized that the third near-death experience would be the next step. I got on an airplane coming from Los Angeles. I blew two subdural hematomas. This is where Art came. Art came.
Uh-huh.
But I have, because I had to have open heart surgery, I had to take Coumadin.
Where were you, at the airport when this happened?
I was on the plane.
You were on the plane?
At 37,000 feet.
Oh, now you got to describe this for us.
Well, it's pretty horrifying.
I mean, did you know, hey, I'm having a heart attack or something's happening to me?
No, what happened was, George, I got on the plane. I was a little tired. All of a sudden, I heard this pop. And we're at 37,000 feet in a pressurized cabin. I heard this pop. And when this pop came, I knew something had happened because I got really calm and peaceful. And then all of a sudden, I thought my head was going to explode.
All right.
Okay, and I get home, and I'm trying to figure out what this is. I can't figure out what it is, and I go to the doctor, and what they're telling me is I had blown a blood vessel.
It was a stroke, basically, wasn't it?
Exactly, but it was pumping the blood out of my brain and forcing my brain against the side of my skull. I couldn't see, I couldn't think, and the pain was so immense. But what it came from is my blood was too thin because I had to take Coumadin.
Right.
And because for the pain in my back and all the kind of pains that you have from going through being struck by lightning and open heart surgery and all of that, I was taking Tylenol, acetaminophen. When you mix sodium warfarin, which is Coumadin, with acetaminophen, it strips the blood vessels.
And nobody knew that then, did they?
No, no one knew. And all of a sudden, I get off the plane. I blow another subdural hematoma.
Oh.
And then when I get to the hospital, I hold on, and after Art did his prayer thing, I felt well enough, and I figured if I was going to die, I wanted to eat a shrimp dinner.
The last request.
Well,
huh?
It's just Daniel, as everybody knows me.
And key lime pie.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
So I left the hospital, and then I went to a restaurant, and I had shrimp dinner. And then I ate a piece of key lime pie, and I blew a third subdual hemorrhage.
Oh, my God.
So I had to get back to the hospital. I got into the hospital, but I spent 15 days. And, George, this is the funny part, so that no matter what anybody hears, the spiritual world has a sense of humor. The doctor came in on Monday. My neurosurgeon came in on Monday, and he said, Daniel, we've waited now 13 days. The pressure is so much. He didn't have to tell me that. He said, if we don't go in, you won't live three more days.
Yeah, they had to relieve this.
And he says, instead, because what they're going to do is cut my scalp away, take away the right side of my skull, and try to repair the damage, but I would not have survived it. So he said, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drill holes in the side of your head to relieve that pressure and get that blood off. So I got struck by lightning September the 17th at 7:05 p.m. 1975 on a Wednesday afternoon during a thunderstorm. On Monday, he said, we're going to schedule this for Wednesday morning. He didn't know. He'd never read Saved by the Light. Wednesday morning was September the 17th at 7:05 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. September the 17th at 7:05 a.m. on a Wednesday morning due to a thunderstorm. I went into brain surgery.
This is giving me the willies just thinking of what they were doing to you.
Art, you can put your finger on the left side of my head where the lightning went in, you can put your finger in the hole. On the right side of my head where they drill the first hole, you can put your finger in the hole. And it's like, you know, making a joke. There's no space in between them, as if somebody had stuck a pencil through my head. I went into brain surgery, and the most amazing thing to me was here I was again. And when they put me in the anesthesia and I popped out of my body, instead of floating above like both other times, I was standing at the foot. When I watched them roll my head to the left-hand side so the right was exposed and shave my head, it was just amazing to me why they only shaved half your head. And when I watched this rig they put that had a drill, and when they drilled the first hole, I was astounded. I started down the tunnel. I headed toward the same things I normally go through. I began the panoramic life review, but something drew me back. And all of a sudden, I was watching this blue-gray place, the same place I'd been two other times when I thought no one else was there but me. Okay, but this time I noticed there were dimensions in other worlds. And when I saw this, George, what was so amazing to me, and I honestly believe it was something that they were showing me that would be the mission for the rest of my life, but it was also the point that, Daniel, in your anger at what people do and what they think about death and how they give away the life and value of those who you love to doctors and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. And I had grown to resent that now that I was in my probably 20th year of hospice work. And when I watched this, I could see that there were dimensions. And I realized that there were people who trapped themselves between this world and down the tunnel. And it was only about free will. And I began to look at the groups of people, so many veterans. You know what the Twilight Brigade is to me. It's my life's work. But this is why. There were thousands of people who were veterans. More than any other group were veterans. And I listened to the guys with PTSD out of Vietnam and shell shock and battle fatigue and who are coming back out of Afghanistan and Iraq with PTSD and polybrain trauma. That is so much unresolved issues is why I'm so dedicated to Veterans Care Plus and to the Twilight Brigade. But I saw people who were jackasses like me who instead of letting go and going down.
And you were mean.
Oh, please.
You were mean.
As good as it gets.
Yep.
I'm still a little like that, George, but now it's directed toward the defense of people who I think are frightened so much that they give away so much of their dignity, and the failure of our government to protect and support people who have served and honored this country, and we as American citizens who do not come to their defense. I mean, you know how I get on every November 11th.
Oh, yeah.
But when I saw this, there were people who were trapping themselves, some who didn't want to go down the tunnel because they liked the life of abusing people, others who never really respected the life that they had and added as preciousness and as so much love and divinity to it as they could. And when you start talking about hellish experiences of the 3-5% of near-death experiences, I now understood where they went to. And what I saw was that we are living in a world without a spiritual identity. We've lost faith in everything because our government, our banks,
they've let us down.
Our religion. And what happens is we create these mentalities that trap us. And so Kat has a really funny story about this, but what I looked at, George, was this is a world I could have trapped myself in, because I resented so much of what I knew to be the truth and what I'm so thankful that I get to come on Coast to Coast so much for, because there's an army of us who trust George, and I'm just the same guy. But this third near-death experience opened up my consciousness to this blue-gray place. I believe, George, and this is why Kat and I wrote The Secrets, I believe that the mentality that we're so much using, the resentment that we have toward those who we trusted, our elected officials, our veterans who have served, our present-day veterans, because, look, the other day, the highest suicide rate in active servicemen in the history of America.
Yeah, it is sad.
And 1,000 a month who are veterans are now suiciding. And there's been a 58% increase in PTSD reports of veterans who served in Vietnam. And me and Kat, who do hospice work at the bedside, about 73% of all veterans who's ever served in combat fight a war. Well, if they're fighting a war in their last breath, when they take that last breath, they will trap themselves. And this is the real impetus of what the Twilight Brigade is. We had to do something. That's why Kat's the president and I'm the founder. We had to do something. We had to create a methodology. So we train people on this side, and we help veterans, now 19,000 of them, pass from this world to the next world, and they'll help those coming across. And we wrote The Secrets of the Light. So, Kat, this is something, George, that's really normal for me, what she's about to say, because I'm very used to it. But it's amazing in a relationship between a husband and wife, the story that you tell. So, Kat, would you tell that story?
I'd be happy to.
Go ahead, Kat.
When Daniel first had the third near-death experience, he was very reticent to talk about it. Being trapped in that blue-gray place for the 40 hours that he was very...
Did you tell George? Let me interrupt, George. I spent 41 hours in the recovery room. I mean, I stayed in that blue-gray place for 2 days.
That's a long time.
And they gave me an 8% chance of surviving because I have a massive, I had a massive grand mal seizure when I came out of it.
Yeah.
Was put on life support in the neurocardiac ward.
Okay.
Sorry, honey.
That's all right, honey. I'm glad you cleared that up. So when he was better and we were able to spend time together, I would ask him, well, what happened during this near-death experience? And he would never say. About 18 months later, we were out one evening and we went to see a movie called The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
If you remember
great
that with
movie.
Bruce Willis.
Yes,
that's
yeah.
Right. We came home, went to bed, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was awakened by a lot of activity in the bedroom. And I looked around in the night and saw spirits everywhere. They were hanging from the chandelier, they were on the fan, they were sitting on top of the desk, on top of the bed. It's as if we had collected these spirits. We'd gone to this movie, we'd open up that portal, that
yep.
vortex. They knew that we could see them, sense them, hear them, and they had come to us for help. And the interesting thing is Daniel didn't finish that story about Ruth Montgomery. The last letter that she wrote to him, she told him that he had merged with his higher self when he came back from that last experience.
And she was, of course, a champion
for
near-death experiences.
Incredible.
And one of the first, I think, a long time ago. She died in 2001. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue our discussion with Daniel and Catherine Brinkley and also we'll take your phone calls for them, and maybe you want to share your near-death story with them. I'm George Norrie, back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls this hour with Danyon and Catherine Brinkley. We'll also continue our discussion with them as we talk about the secrets of the light right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll get to your calls in just a second. We're with Danyon and Catherine Brinkley. Catherine, you have gone through grief in your life. You've lost a 10-year-old niece. Your brother died, both of them within 6 months. How did you handle that?
Oh, with God's help. That was very shocking.
And my help too, Mom.
Oh, of course, honey. But you are my God, aren't you?
How'd you like that, George?
I'm here playing my violin.
He knows you well. No, it was a very, very trying period for the entire family, and I think hardest on my mother of all. But because everything we know, everything that we've experienced on the other side, I have no grief about seeing them again one day. I know that that's a certainty. But what everyone has to realize is, although we realize there is an afterlife and that we will be with our relatives again, our pets again, there is a certain amount of missing them, a certain amount of sorrow and sadness that never goes away. And, of course, the closer we are to the people we love, the more we miss them after they've gone.
Danyon, in terms of science, how do you explain these near-death experiences?
Well, first let me say this. Ralph, who grieved himself, which is Catherine's brother, he grieved himself to death, George, when he lost his 10-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
And Ralph was a truck driver who never missed a show from 1994 until the last day. So this
never missed the Coast to Coast show.
Never.
Never. He was a truck driver who drove at night and
yeah.
always tuned in.
One of the world's leading authorities on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
that's true.
In the science, here's the key. Until I found quantum theory, I really never had a connection to the universe. It was always energy. And until I had that, George, I had to live off of mythologies, so-called faith perspectives. But quantum physics has already proven the multi-universe theory that brought us the cell phone, the DVD, the PC, and the CD, and the DVD, has already proven the ability for us to understand dimensional reality. Science is about to discover in the next 3 years when we go to HDTV, and because it's going to change consciousness, high definition from analog to compressed digital transmission.
It will happen.
The spiritual world harmonizes, like frequency harmonizing, just like in music. When you have digital compression, they will harmonize. People on their cell phones, on their on their PCs, their personal computers, on their laptops, on their Blackberries, on their high-definition television, and even more importantly, security cameras will begin to record more and more of this dimensional reality. Science is only now developing machinery and devices that are capable of helping interpret and understand what we already know, George, to exist. What mythology, what shamans, what religious factors, and what people who have recorded this stuff forever, it's now becoming a reality. So in this 2012 period, I believe that the discoveries of the next level of consciousness and the return of that level of consciousness back into this dimension will become so obvious. The same thing about UFOs. And remember, George, I first said all of this in 1976.
Oh, yeah, you were way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, people who ever read Saved by the Light, they can go back and read the prophecies or predictions, which I didn't know that's what they were. In 1976, when Raymond Moody first interviewed me, I said all this stuff. I wish I'd have kept a lot of it to myself because people go through that profit business, but I'm not any of that. I'm a person who lives in death every day. You know, I'm probably 26,000 hours in the VA and over 50,000 hours of studying this because I have no fear of it. And what I'm asking people to do with this new book that Kat and I have written, and thanks for letting us come on and talk about it.
Of course.
What I'm trying to do is to get people to say, hey, everybody, if you don't ground yourself spiritually And you don't let go of the realities that you've created for yourself because you believe some illusion about whether you can trust your government or the fiat currency system or the one world government, or whether that's not really occurring. And every time it fails you, you have a tendency to know you'll get trapped in that in-between world, or someone you love or someone who loves you that is in transition will get trapped. 75% of all families never talk about death until after it happens. If you read what we're reading about and you look at what 1997, and George, it took me 10 years because I could not find a language to help people mm-hmm. understand this. But now, in this next 5 years, this is critical. And so with Catherine's help and when we sat down, because she sees things that I see, but it's natural for me to deal with a room full of dead people, and I want her to finish that. But it's natural for me to see this. There's no, you know, I don't live in some, I appear to be in the Swami business, but I don't live in some cosmic reality. I see these things and deal with these things, and my life is helping people not get trapped. And this is what this book about, and if you read this book, you really get a chance and have an insight when you come to that time to help someone you love or someone who loves you, but even more importantly, to help yourself not let the psychologies that you've begun to use trap you, because it's all free will that does it.
Absolutely. Let's take some calls here. Let's pick it up by going east of the Rockies. Susie in Dayton, Ohio, you're on with Danian and Catherine. Hi, Susie.
Hi, this is Susie from Dayton, and I love this show. This is wonderful. And I wanted to share, I kind of can relate with Kat. I had a near-death experience when I was 8 years old. I was at the beach, and I got caught in an undertow, and I was all by myself. And I kept going around and around and around and around, and I knew I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I was at such peace. I will never forget this. I'm 53 years old, and I remember it like it happened this morning. I was not scared. I was in so much peace, and it was beautiful. Everything was black, and I just knew that I was going to die, and I wasn't afraid. And then my foot hit the sand, and it wasn't my time to go. But I'll never forget that. And I also wanted to share an experience at hospice. A very, very good friend of mine had cancer, and she was passing through. And it was me and her two sisters, and she had asked a handful of us to be in the room with her on, you know, when she passed away or when she passed through. And everybody had left. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And me and her two sisters were sitting there by her bedside, and it was the most beautiful thing. I will never forget this. There was no candle or no little nightlight on her nightstand, but she had the most beautiful glow. You could see almost like an amber beautiful glow around her face.
A halo.
Halo, yes. And her sisters saw it too. And then she passed away about an hour later, but she was looking on the other side. I believe that. She was a very spiritual person, and I think that that was her gift to us and to her sister. To her sisters, I think it was beautiful.
Well, what that is like, don't mean to interrupt, but...
Oh, sure.
But what that is this is the world Kat and I are trying to create, and George, and the Coast to Coast family. And, George, I so sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, when you say you are losing the fear of death and other than that horror, because I'm very leveled about this, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that you say that, and the same for Sue. Sue, because that person asked who to be in that room, you were doing what George is doing on Friday night, that she was surrounding herself and her this person in transition. No one ever dies. They only go from one world to the next. She was surrounding herself in transition so that you could hold the light. And what you got a chance to see, you know, in the Bible it says, where two or more gather in my name, so shall I be among you. Well, there is one place that people who want to know if that is a true story. It's you and the person that's leaving, and the next is where the divinity is. And so what you got a chance is sense and see divinity. That's why I called it a halo, because that surrounds a person as they look into the heavens, and it creates that peace and security. And to know that that person will not get trapped in that in-between world, And that's what you know that you contributed to. And, I mean, I really thank you for doing that. I hope you do more hospice work. But I really thank you for that.
Very good. Let's go next to our wild card line. Back to Dayton we go. Moondog. There's only got to be one Moondog. You've got to be from the Nighthawk zone, right?
Yes, sir.
That's you.
George.
Good, Moondog. Not bad. Go ahead.
Okay. In February, I was a semi-truck driver, and I flipped my truck. I don't remember. I was in my seatbelt. I was ejected from my seatbelt, so I'm rolling around inside the cab.
Wow.
I don't remember no pain. I got a concussion. I got hit in the head. I don't remember no pain.
You were bouncing all over the place.
I was literally, yes, I was. I was talking to my wife. She's Mooncat. And I was talking to her on a Bluetooth.
Mooncat.
So she hears the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
my gosh.
I was standing on the side of the road with a group of people. And I did not hear a sound. And this was about 2 weeks later, or 2 or 3 weeks later after the accident, but I had the dream that I seen the truck. I couldn't see no bodies, but there were people standing with me on the side of the road, and you couldn't hear no sound, like, you know, a truck wreck or anything like that. And the color was gray.
Just like
blue,
you said,
gray.
Daniel.
You were in the in-between world.
I remember my wife said, because my Bluetooth had come loose from my ear, my wife, all I remember was, you know, I was asking for help, but no, I couldn't hear nobody. But my wife could hear me because the Bluetooth was behind me somewhere.
And it was still on. And had it stayed in your ear, Moondog, you would have been a national commercial for that company.
Well, as a matter of fact,
can you hear me now?
I did shut down I-20 for like 10 hours.
Oh,
but,
my God.
But, you know, thank God I'm okay. But
did you have a near-death experience, though?
When I come to my senses, I thought I was dead. Didn't know if I was alive or dead.
Okay, this group, let me ask a question, Moondog.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people, because Kat and I have been studying death for like now a million years, but a lot of people who have car accidents, and I don't think they're accidents, they're planned stages of growth. I believe that there are at least 7 periods that a person can leave, and accidents, car accidents, most people watch the car accident from above or from the side of the road.
Yeah.
Okay, they're not there. There's a certain condition called shock that people go into. But
right.
Shock never relates them to standing on the side of the road with a group of people watching this incident. Did you get a chance to look at what that group of people looked like, or a conscious perspective about who they were?
Well, actually, they didn't really look like people. They just looked like
objects, huh?
Animated objects or something. You know what I'm saying?
Dear
like
God.
like you remember the David Goliath, the clay figures,
the cartoon type thing, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Goliath was the dog.
Exactly. Yeah. It was something like it wasn't like they were real people.
Well, those are your spirit guides.
Like I said, I'm sorry.
Those are like spirit guides. Those are the beings that let you know that you're safe as you're going through this experience, but also to take you one step removed from it. And what you're describing is the blue-gray place. And let me ask this, Moondog. What were you thinking about the couple of days before this happened?
A couple of days before this happened? I've been having trouble with my truck for a couple weeks. I remember telling my brother, telling my wife, telling other people that, you know, 16 years, I need to get out of the truck, and I don't care how it happens.
And so did you quit? Did you get out of the truck after this?
I've not been able to drive. I'm on disability right now.
Usually
when a person is getting ready to have an accident like this, they would usually tell, this is something I've learned, George, through years,
yeah.
nothing ever happens that is not planned. And most people who go through things like this, they know a week or so or a couple of days before. And if you go back and look at the conversations, they're literally either saying goodbye or they're telling people what they sense is being set in motion. Well, when this happened, it was time for you to change. It was time for you to catch your breath. That blue-gray place was putting you either in the anxiety of the job you have, which would have trapped you in that middle-level place, but you had those people with you, that animated, quote-unquote, sets of beings to help you move safely out of the situation you found yourself so that you wouldn't be trapped, so that you could spend a productive life with your wife. And this is the same thing between me and Catherine. What I need you to do, Moondog, is to sit down with her and figure out what spiritually focused service you two can do, because you were spared from this transition because of her love and that Bluetooth, so that you two could find, like Catherine and I found, through love and support, something you can do together that helps other people as a couple move away from that consciousness that was trapping you into a better life. And since you're on disability, you have time for the two of you to do it.
Danian, is this blue-gray place what we used to call limbo?
And purgatory, yeah. And dosha, and bahid. Every religion in every part of the world, and you know, George, I've wandered all over the world looking at this stuff. There's a name for it. And everybody has a name for it. And I think it's the answer to hellish experiences. I think when you listen to near-death experiences, and a lot of those are oxygen brain deprivation, lobe seizures, frontal lobe seizures, apophylactic shock, but a lot of those places that people go are self-consciously driven into this blue-gray place, and this is where the hellish experience comes from. And so when Catherine and I sat down to write this book, because if people read it, they see it's a different style of Danian. I'm a lot nicer. I'm not threatening anybody.
Yeah.
I'm not calling people names, in which she scolds me on. But it's about helping people. George, if I've been through this stuff, and I've lived 58 years, and I've lived 33 years in studying death, when I see what's occurring, and I see the suicide rate and the what's going on and the amount of antidepressants that's being crammed down from our little children to adults and multiple antidepressants, this is going to cause that blue-gray place to fill up. And I sincerely believe that what is happening now with the Catholic Church having over 700% increases in exorcism, and somebody on television was having an exorcism in a hospital in England somewhere, that place is going to get filled. And we are about to experience so many fearful things because those struggling individuals are going to come back into this level of consciousness, create attachments, possessions, and what we're seeing happen. And we will slow down people's ability to make that transition.
We're going to be right back with Danian and Catherine Brinkley. We're going to take final phone calls with them, authors of the new work, The Secrets of the Light. The website is Danian, DANNION.com. Back with you. We'll take your final calls. Danian, you and Catherine normally go to the Yucatan, don't you, quite a bit?
Well, you know, George, for years I have gone everywhere where there is a death cult. The Mayans have a death cult. The Egyptians have a death cult. But before I get there, I need to ask you a question.
All right.
Since I believe this blue-gray place is where ghosts come from, poltergeists and trapped spirits, demons, quote-unquote, when you went to Ghost Fest just a couple of days ago,
right,
Catherine and I and our two girls, Adriana and Angelica, we spent the night in the Eisenhower room on the Queen Mary. And what?
Why?
Why not?
But because we're ghost hunters too. And what I want to know is what's been going on down there, because for us, we have two children. I mean, they were kids. And they ended up sleeping in our bed with us, because someone was walking around in the Eisenhower stateroom. They don't go ghost busting, and they don't think like, you know, that. They were just kids. And they ended up sleeping with us. So knowing that you go to these programs, what do you think? Tell me what happened at the Ghost Fest.
Well, that's a haunted ship. Now, a couple of years ago when I was there, I went on the full tour of the entire ship and heard some really creepy things. Well, what people have reported on that ship, and it has, as you know, incredible history, but a lot of soldiers and people have died on that ship as it was a transport ship after it was its luxury liner, and it would take soldiers back and forth. But it's very old, it's very creaky. But at the same time, people are seeing very strange anomalies on this.
That's what our kids did. And they couldn't figure out why Kat and I would, you know, we have to trick them, you know. Because what we do is, with the youngest ones, we take vacations so that we all pile into one or two rooms.
Sure.
And they didn't have any idea. They thought the same thing you thought. Why in the world are we staying on the Eisenhower cabin on a ghost on this ship? And they ended up seeing these people walking around in the room. So for us, this blue-gray place represents finally a place where that all exists from. And what I'd like to do is this, George. I appreciate that you show up and that people get to hear what happens and that we know for sure, based on our kids and that we've been on this ship, that this is really happening. And, you know, I think it's important for people to not just cast this aside, that people really have to start looking at this from the standpoint of realizing there are greater dimensions of reality that we live in. And what Coast to Coast is bringing forward is the information for them to make those decisions, and that you, not on someone else's dime, but on George Norrie's dime, makes these appearances. And I'm just really appreciative of it. And I'm glad that you're seeing a lot of the things that these people are seeing.
Oh, yeah. They're there. Now let's go to some final calls here. West of the Rockies, Virginia, in Las Vegas. Hi, Virginia.
Hello there.
Welcome to the show.
What a wonderful program tonight.
Yes.
Or morning in the East Coast.
That's true.
I had a experience. I'm the oldest of eight children. And since I can remember, I had a dream.
What was that?
The dream was I was a queen.
You are a queen, Virginia.
Thank you.
A queen where? How were you dressed?
I'm 88 now. I'll be 89 this year.
That is good for you.
Dressed as a queen?
I had red velvet, white trim, and a tiara.
Red velvet.
Mm-hmm.
White trim.
All right, let's get into this dream.
Well, anyway, I was headed for the stairway of this in this castle. And as I got to the top of the stairs, I noticed the wind was blowing through the rooms below. The shutters were banging and the drapes. They didn't look like drapes like we know them. They looked like gunny sacks, that type of material. And I was complaining, who left those windows open? And I was raising holy heck about it.
What did the staircase look like?
It was wide and winding. But not too winding, but it did have a curve.
Okay.
And this castle had Gothic windows and all that, like not medieval either, but anyway, it was all of stone. And what happened was in this dream, it recurred constantly. I had this dream always. And the dream ended where this fellow was taking me, escorting me to have my shoes fitted. And I was still yelling about the windows.
What did he look like? How was he dressed?
Oh, yeah, it's sort of like jodhpurs, pants, you know, I guess you would call them like...
Now, Virginia, did this, though, have anything to do with any after-death experience?
Oh, yes. This is...
Okay, tell us that.
This is the lead up to this. In 1990, I had a heart attack, and they got the lines in me, and the doctor told me I was having a heart attack, and he was going to give me a shot. So I got the shot, and in that transition, I did not go through a tunnel. I did not see really a white light. But I saw my mother. She was in this castle, and she looked right at me and nodded in the affirmative. You know, yes. Yes, just as if to say, thinking about it later, you've got to go back.
So this dream happened after the 1990 experience?
No, I was having it from my birth. I can remember it.
The queen dream, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
tie this in, though. What's this,
well,
the
what
heart attack and the
was,
dream?
The fact is that he said there's life after death. There must be because I saw my mother.
There's no question.
And I had to come back. But this, the way this follows through, March of 91, all hell broke loose. I survived all this. Saw my mother, did this and this, and was thinking about all this and the life after death. March 1st or 2nd, my son-in-law died.
Oh, my.
March 3rd, a friend of 50 years died.
Passed.
March the 12th, my husband went into emergency. March 27th, my son died of an aneurysm.
Oh, my word.
July, my brother died. 10 days after that, his son died. And we went on down the line. My husband died.
How long have you been married?
I lost 7 of my immediate family, plus a son-in-law, a brother-in-law, and a friend, 10 people, in less than 13 months.
How in the heck did you cope with that, Virginia?
Well, the doctors wanted to give me tranquilizers and help me sleep. I said no, for the simple fact that it puts you to sleep artificially. You wake up, you still have the problems. So I was relating back to death. My mother was an affirmative. I took responsibility for my siblings. I had to help my mother. I'm still doing it. I got 2 sisters left.
All right, there's a lesson here, Daniel, I guess.
Okay, this is the point, too. Number one, and thank you for calling us, because this is what Catherine and I do, and Kat probably has a better grip on this than me. But remember, when this dream started from life, it was established in a place of that your identity, that you had, where all your relationships that we're now discussing had come into play. All these people were around during that period of time. And when I'm asking you what the clothes are, what the apparel is, because from doing this for 30 years, George, I hunt the time period. Royal velvet, which is red and purple, these have certain majestic periods. It's around 800. Maybe 850 to 925. The fact that she'd established this dream over and over again would be a period and a point that she could relate to, that these events would happen at a certain point in the future history, that what would happen, that she would understand and deal with it. And then when she saw her mother, when her mother appeared in the same structured dream, it was to give validity to the fact that she had lived before. It gave validity to the fact that there's a life after death. And at 88 years old, what she's processing and what she's dealing with, which represents being left alone now, that all of a sudden she can go back to a historical dream, a time that she was royalty, that these people passed away during that period of time, and that her mother would give her strength to move on and stay clear that there's a life after death and that she would be there. What I'd like to do is say thank you for when you called us and listening to George Norrie at 12 o'clock at night and being 88 years old, and that we live in Las Vegas. Go to Danion.com and email Catherine, because she's sitting at the computer, which is I don't. And, George, we have gotten numerous emails about, finally, Daniel, you have your wife on the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that right, Mama?
That's right. But something else I want to say about Virginia's dream. It's interesting that she's wearing red, because that is the color of the base
chakra. But she said velvet, too, Mama.
Yes, well, velvet.
All right. And, Virginia, after the heart attack, did the dream continue?
No, after I saw my mother. I've lost my 2 older children. I got 1 child left. They passed away. After that incident of seeing my mother, she turned and looked at me and smiled and nodded in the affirmative. I've never had the dream since.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, well.
But being
fitted
with the shoes, hon, would mean that she was being grounded, that she was being prepared to walk through this with a sense of royalty, with a sense of elegance and majesty.
So, Virginia, email, go to Danyon.com and email Kat, because she's reading all that stuff, so we know how to find you, and that somewhere in the course of this life in Las Vegas, we'd like to have lunch. Is that okay?
Good for you, but Danyon. Let's go to San Francisco now. Douglas, you're up with him. Hi.
Hi. Always so good to talk to you, Mr. Nouri.
Thanks, Douglas.
And
What about me?
Yeah. So Mr. Brinkley, you deal with thousands of people. I'm sure you don't remember, but you were kind enough to call me after my father's death. And I was so
Say your name again.
Douglas Dietrich, and I was so starstruck that I hung up by accident. You were kind enough to call again. I was so shocked and celebrity-stricken. I want to thank your wife, Catherine, for providing you with adult supervision, because all veterans need adult supervision.
Amen.
And what I wanted to speak about was when you spoke to me about my dad's death and his career, it was so helpful, but I do want to talk a bit about the challenges that face veterans' families and why the Twilight Brigade is so important.
And Veterans Care Plus, too, Doug.
Oh, gosh, whatever you can get a hold of, yes. And I've spoken in public with Mr. Nouri before about the burning of the records at St. Louis, Missouri, which you're all too well aware of.
Absolutely.
And the challenges I dealt with getting my dad benefits all of his life and how they won't honor it for his widow after, you know, after my father's death. It's just a nightmare, and I am...
Hold on. Take a listen to me.
Sure.
Take a breath. This is Coast to Coast. These are the most loyal, loving, from Lex, who puts it up, from Tommy, who does it, from George, and these are the most loving people. And look, this is why we created Veterans Care Plus. If people go on Danyon.com and they get past that beautiful Danyon stuff that Kat created, they'll find Veterans Care Plus and they'll see what subject matter we're dealing with. And you know something? I would call a veteran. And I think that, didn't I help you deal with what your father was going through?
Yeah, I think you helped him quite a bit, Danyon.
So you've gotten rid of him now, George?
No, he's listening to you.
Okay.
I'm letting him catch his breath.
Well, but you know what, George? I'm going to tell you, this is from me, from my heart.
Watch.
I've been 15...
Hi, Douglas, you there?
Oh, yes, I'm still here.
All right, good.
I've been 15 years on this show. And what Kat and I did, and when we were talking about our book, The Secrets of the Light, and I told Tom this. I call him Tommy, I'm sorry. But there are certain parts of my life that I would say, we've been on Good Morning America or whatever it was, CBS Morning, and all those shows that really... supposedly are important. But I wait until I come to my Coast to Coast family because of who you are and my legacy here, and that I'm always straight up about people and helping people, and that I waited to talk about this blue-gray place, that knowing that his father didn't get trapped, and people who have followed this and read what we do, and both of us being veterans and both of us creating ways that we can support that, that's what Secrets of the Light's about. It's what the Twilight Brigade is about. It's what Danyon.com is about. It's what Veterans Care Plus is about. But it's also about this. We're creating a way. I mean, we're doing a program on March the 21st. This Danyon in Las Vegas. I mean, I was going to invite you, but I looked at your schedule. I see you in L.A.
God, I'm in L.A., Vancouver.
Well, I see you on the 13th in L.A. I'm not coming to Vancouver. But I'll tell you this, too, George. I want to bring this up fast. I sincerely believe that when we talked to Zahi, and I watched you when you told me the excitement about Zahi when he talks to me, because Catherine and I and Zahi are good friends.
Right.
I sincerely believe that people should come to the website and make sure they show up. Whitley is in Las Vegas, your Tuesday guy. He's in Las Vegas on the 15th of February because Kat wants to keep crop circles and aliens in her life.
Sure.
And then I have the 21st. But when you get ready to go to Egypt, to walk that path and to look at it, I know we're talking about the Mayans, but when you get ready to walk that path, I want to go, and Kat and I want to go with you to broadcast those shows, because that's your birthplace, George. and to take George Norrie into the heart.
Well, he was my dad's birthplace, not mine.
Okay, but
I was in Detroit.
Well, but your dad's birthplace.
Right.
To take that into the heart and knowing the power of Zahi, that we could really create a great show. But Kat and I go to the Yucatan all the time. Why? Mayans, death cults, and what the 2012 is. The Mayans invented the zero. And we just came back from there like 7 or 8 days ago. And Kat, tell George how much fun we had.
Oh, it was an unbelievable group. I mean, we've done this now. This was our fourth annual trip, and we took 29 strangers into a place that none of them had ever been before. And within, 24 hours, it was like a family reunion. And the
reason, these were doctors.
It's a great place. I've been there once in my life.
You need to go with us, George.
It's something such a terrific trip, and everyone that was with us was wide open to expanding their spirituality, and the Yucatan is the place to do it. I do believe it's a wonderful vortex for that.
I wonder if we have time for one more first-time caller. Gary in Pittsburgh, I just want to say, I guess you're delighted with the Super Bowl win tonight. Hi, Gary. There you are. Go ahead, Gary, just about a minute, if you want to get a quick question out.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My heart stopped in my kitchen.
Your phone's stopping, too.
And it fell. The groceries fell, and I ended up in this big white room, about 14 by 14, all walls, floors, ceiling, everything. And my ex-wife was there. She was an RN, and she started giving me CPR. And I saw the big white light, and it was so peaceful.
In 30 seconds, Daniel, if people see the light, what do they do?
What they should do is know that they have passed through that blue-gray place, which is what our book is about. They have passed, and they are safe. And this is that place where comfort and divinity and love places. For those of us who don't quite grip it, they need to read this book, The Secrets of the Light. They need to come to Danyon.com. Look at the Kinetics magazine, look at Veterans Care Plus, and spend some time in a family of Daniel and Catherine and this loving family, and for God's sakes, continue to listen to and pay attention to Coast and George Norrie.
Catherine, Daniel, take care.
Thank you, George.
We love you, George, with all our heart. Tommy and Lex, but we love you with all our heart.
Good night.
Good night.